Mind you that 90% of parents, at least in the US, probably even higher in Canada, want their children to be told to abstain from sexual activity, and in public forums, they CECAS agrees that they do that. Sex for teens? Not a good idea. In a 2007 interview on NPR with Bill Smith, the CECAS Director of Public Policy, the moderator asked him, "You would agree that it would be best if kids didn't have sex in high school, am I right?" Bill Smith said, "Listen, absolutely. It is better for young people to wait to have sex. There is no question about that." Now, I cannot emphasize strongly enough to you that when speaking to young people, writing to young people, creating websites for young people, this is not the message that CECAS gives. Now, what I'm going to show you is disturbing and graphic, and I apologize. It's really not for a civilized group of people getting together to see this sort of thing, but I have to show it to you because this is what our kids are being taught. So if you're real sensitive to this stuff, close your eyes. This is from a book that I found that was recommended to girls by Planned Parenthood as an excellent resource. The chapter is called To Do It or Not to Do It, and basically kids are told, girls, the real issue is to be comfortable with your decision every time. Do what you want, do what you are comfortable with. Regarding uncertainty, no one can tell you whether you're ready for sex. You're the only one who knows whether you can handle the responsibility. This is from a website called the Coalition for Positive Sexuality. Kids are directed to this website by Planned Parenthood and CECAS, and I've highlighted there, that it says, you have the right to make your own choices and to have people respect them. This is from Planned Parenthood. There's an article there that says, "Am I ready?" And the expert says, "Am I ready is a question only you can answer, so take your time and talk things through with your partner if you're thinking of taking this big step." Now I ask you, who is most likely to be the partner of a 15-year-old girl who's thinking of having sex? Her 16-year-old, hormone-driven boyfriend. And she's supposed to talk it through with him. And they call this realistic and what parents would want. But they talk more about just, sex for teenagers. They get into some disturbing material. They talk about sexual sadism and masochism. This is from a site called girl.com, G-U-R-L.com, also recommended by the sex ed authorities, and they say, S&M is short for sadism and masochism. Sadism is sexual arousal or satisfaction from inflicting pain onto another person. And then they give examples, whipping, spanking, etc. Though it may seem painful, those involved find that the pleasure outweighs the pain. According to experts, the pain is supposed to be received or given in love and is not to be viewed as cruelty. So when they say comprehensive sex education, mind you, this is part of what they mean by comprehensive, that it should include stuff like this. This is about anal sex. Some straight couples use anal sex as a way to preserve the woman's virginity. For those who like it, anal stimulation can be part of masturbation, intercourse, or oral sex. Okay, what I want to say over here is two things. One is that anal intercourse is a very, very high-risk behavior. And what I tell people, regardless of who they are and what their orientation is not to engage in this behavior. It is simply too dangerous. I didn't make this up. I'm just repeating the words of the Surgeon General from the U.S. under Reagan, Everett Koop. And this was the beginning of the AIDS epidemic, and you can still find it actually on the website, the FDA website. because they speak about how, with or without a condom, this is a behavior that is simply too dangerous to engage in. Condoms have not been tested during anal sex. That's why it says on condom wrappers. Again, I don't know about what's going on up here, but condoms that are made down there have a warning on them that say use of this device for anything other than vaginal intercourse could decrease its level of protection. Now, if they're going to be telling kids about this, and that in itself is a question, they need to add that PS, right? They need to tell them, hey, you know, this is a really high-risk behavior, even with a condom. But you will not find that sort of warning. Here's a page from this book that I found recommended by Planned Parenthood. It's showing different positions. This is about three-way sex. What they don't say about oral sex is that it's been linked to head and neck cancers. Now, most of you probably, at least some of you, have never heard of that because it hasn't been put out there the way that it should be. But as of a few years ago, it was discovered that certain cancers, particularly cancers of the tonsils, which had at one point been very, very rare, they have spiked in incidence. And the reason they've spiked is because more and more people have been exposed to the human papillomavirus in their oral, in their mouth and throat from having oral sex with many partners. And what happens is that, you know about human papillomavirus causing cancer of the cervix. The tonsils are covered by cells very similar to the cells covering the immature cervix. So the human papillomavirus can be transmitted during oral sex, lodge in the tissue of the tonsils, sit there for a long time, and cause cancer down the line. But instead of telling kids that, they have a cartoon, and I apologize again, but this is a cartoon. The girl is saying, do you want to kiss me now that I've tasted your semen? And the guy is saying, sure, why not? It's just protein. Okay, this is a video that I'm going to show you in 1 second. This is a video that is on YouTube right now. It's the vice president of, one of the vice presidents of medical affairs at Planned Parenthood. Her name is Vanessa Cullins. And this is what she has to say about HPV, the human papillomavirus.
My name is Vanessa Cullins. I'm vice president of medical affairs at Planned Parenthood. I know what I know about sexuality and sexual health because I'm a trained obstetrician, gynecologist, and I'm a sexually active individual. The purpose of this column is for us to become more explicit and more concrete in talking about sex. Conversation is going to be necessary whether you're thinking this is a relationship going to end up in marriage or one that's going to end up as a one-night stand. In terms of sexually transmitted diseases, expect to have HPV once you become sexually intimate.
Okay.
And know that it's important to give.
Okay. I don't know if you got that at the end. Expect to get HPV once you become sexually intimate. All of us get it. It's up right now on YouTube. Unless they've heard about me doing this. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you know, I learned in my public speaking classes that when you really want to connect with the audience, you should like come out in front and talk like this without having the podium in front of you. But okay, so consider me like in front of the podium. This is so preposterous. I cannot emphasize enough from a medical point of view how over-the-top, crazy, incorrect, medically inaccurate lie this is. And it makes me furious that these people are out there leading kids to believe that once they become sexually active, and let's face it, I mean, most people aren't going into a nunnery or a monastery. Most people look forward to becoming sexually active. They're being led to believe that that's just a bullet. These infections cannot be dodged. It's just part of growing up, part of being sexually active. We all get it. Excuse me. This individual is living in a bubble, I guess, where everyone participates in the kind of sexual behavior where they cannot dodge these bullets. They are being exposed to sexually transmitted infections. Now, let me just underscore, and when I speak to college students especially and high school students, I want to make sure they understand that the human papillomavirus is not a naturally occurring virus in the body. We have a lot of bacteria that colonize the skin and the GI tract and everything, and they're normal and they're supposed to be there. But the human papillomavirus, if you are infected with it, it means you got it from somebody else who got it from somebody else and so on. Two virgins, two people who did not participate in any sort of sexual behavior, who get together and stay together and are monogamous, otherwise known as marriage, never have to worry about any of these things at all. It's a non-issue. Okay, I've calmed down. What do I have next? Oh, this is one of the reasons this kind of teaching to children that whenever they become, when they eventually become sexually active, they're going to most likely get an infection. That's one of the reasons my book is called You're Teaching My Child What? Okay. Here's some of the science that Dr. Cullens and Planned Parenthood knows very, very well that's omitted from sex education. Biology says girls are more vulnerable than boys. Let's talk about these differences and about these vulnerabilities, starting with the brain. What this says over here, do you have Allstate insurance up here? Car insurance? Okay, so you might have seen this. This is an ad that I found in the newspaper one day by Allstate Car Insurance. It goes like this. Why do most 16-year-olds drive like they're missing a part of their brain? And then they say, because they are. And they have this little diagram of a brain with a little cookie-cutter car that's missing. And on the bottom it says, 16-year-old brain. Now, this is based on hard science, okay? It's based on research of the teen brain that began about 10 years ago, because you see, we used to not be able to look inside the brain in a benign way. In other words, we only had CAT scans for looking inside the brain, and they would expose people to a lot of radiation. So we only did CAT scans on people who needed it, who were ill or we suspected might be ill. But then the MRI was developed, the magnetic resonance imaging was developed. And that does not involve any radiation, so that we could go ahead ethically and study kids and young adults, normal kids and normal teenagers, study their brains and see how it's changing from year to year. See how their brains are changing from year to year. And so this was undertaken, and thousands of kids were studied. And the science that came out of that is very, very interesting. That's the science that Allstate is using for their ads. What it showed is that the center of the brain, first of all, that the teen brain is immature, and that the brain doesn't finish developing and with all the circuits completely connected until the 20s, and actually the mid-20s. Maybe this is why these car insurance companies, you know, they won't rent if you're under 25, which is interesting. It must be that the rate of accidents goes up abruptly at that time. Well, I don't know. This is not my expertise, so don't quote me on that. But what I can tell you is that the brain is immature in a teenager, and especially immature is the area of the brain called the prefrontal cortex. Now, the prefrontal cortex is like the CEO of the brain. It's the part of the brain that is rational. It weighs things back and forth. It considers the pros and cons. This is the part of the brain that is immature in adolescence. Now, anyone who's raised a teenager, has a teenager at home, you know, this is not news. Teens do very goofy things. And then when you say to them, what were you thinking when you did that? And they just sort of go, you know what? They weren't thinking. What's happened is that in highly stimulating situations, and teens seek out high stimulation, of course, you know, speeding, roller coasters, and certainly sexual behavior, during those times, that prefrontal cortex is more likely to not be doing its job, and the brain is depending on a more primitive center, which is a center of emotions, and a center based on instinct and what feels good. So this is very important information to have, and in fact, it's being used, I speak about this in my book, it's being used now by the legal profession in the U.S. to argue against the death penalty for minors, because they say their brain is immature. Okay, so anyway, where was I? This is very important in sex education, because the sex educators are saying, look, let's just inundate kids with information, with birth control, with condoms, make sure they have them in their pocket, make sure, you know, they know how to use them. And then they're expecting at the very last moments, and the moments of the most intense, you know, heat of the moment, that they're going to use their rational thinking, use their brains, hold everything. I've got to put on this condom, and I know there's six steps that I have to... look, are some kids going to be able to do that? Yes. But to depend on it, for your whole system of education to rely on that thinking, is foolish, I believe. Now, just a word about the teen girl brain. We know that that in addition to having that immaturity of the prefrontal cortex, the teen girl brain has surging hormones and instability. And guess what? Teen girls are prone to drama. And they're prone to stress and depression. We always knew this. This was common sense. But now we have the biology. We know the molecules, the cells, the neuroanatomy that supports it. Luann Brizendine is a neuropsychiatrist at the University of California. She wrote a book called The Female Brain. I highly recommend it. She said, the female brain is so deeply affected by hormones that their influence can be said to create a woman's reality. One of these hormones is oxytocin. Don't feel bad if you say OxyContin, because everybody does. But it's oxytocin. Oxytocin is a fascinating hormone. It's been known for about 100 years as the hormone that's involved in labor and delivery and milk production. But now we know that oxytocin is a hormone that promotes feelings of human attachment and trust. And amazingly, it's being used now to promote social behavior in autistic individuals. This, I just found this in January of this year. Studies are being done where autistic individuals are given oxytocin to inhale, and it affects their brain in such a way, because autistic people, many of them have lower levels of oxytocin than normal. And so they're given the oxytocin, and they are shown to make more eye contact, be more related socially to people, to be able to look at the face more, whereas without the oxytocin, they're more phobic and anxious and withdrawn and relate to objects, sometimes prefer to relate to objects than to people. So why am I telling you this? Because oxytocin is a hormone that's released during sexual behavior, and it's primarily a female hormone, which is not to say that males also don't have hormones that cause them to feel connected and attached to their sexual partners, but men, especially young men, have a lot of testosterone. And testosterone has the effect of making a boy or a man want to distribute his DNA as far and wide as possible. There's all fascinating stuff about oxytocin, which we probably don't have the time for, right? 5 minutes. Okay, we don't. Okay, this is a fact sheet from the CDC from about a year ago. Sexually transmitted diseases pose a severe threat to women's health and fertility. Biological factors place women at greater risk than men. What are these other biological factors? I just want to tell you briefly about the cervix. Everyone needs to know about this. The cervix is the entrance to the uterus. In a girl, it goes through a process of maturation. It starts off immature, underdeveloped, and with a large, what's called a transformation zone. The transformation zone is only covered by a layer of cells, one cell thick. It's very easy for the human papillomavirus and other infections to get through that one cell and establish itself and create problems. In an older woman, as the girl gets older, this is a mature cervix. It's covered by many cells. It's covered by a layer of tissue that's many cells thick and much, much more tough, harder for the infections, the microorganisms to get through. So that's the mature cervix. This is the immature cervix. That area right there is the area that's only one cell thick. And this is the reason it's acknowledged. You can find this in a gynecology book from 30 years ago, that this is why girls, teenagers who are sexually active at a young age and have multiple partners are getting so many diseases and having trouble with infertility later on. I want to add that it's been discovered as well that two things can delay the maturation of the cervix. Delay the maturation. In other words, keep the girl more vulnerable to infection. Smoking and birth control pills. Wow. Wow is right. By the way, this will be continued to be true even if, oh gosh, do you have the ACLU up here? Do you know what, I don't even know. Even if the ACLU threatens to take legal action, this is still going to be true. It works better when I'm in the U.S. Okay, so I'm just going to conclude by saying that I was told in a recent interview that I must be exaggerating. It must be hyperbole when I say that sex education is madness, that it teaches untruths and exposes our kids to smut. If that's true, I was asked, wouldn't there be congressional hearings? Well, I'm not exaggerating. The sexuality education promoted by organizations like Planned Parenthood and CECUS are madness because they're designed to promote sexual freedom. And when sexual freedom reigns, sexual health suffers. Is every young person going to postpone sex? Of course not. But we are still obligated to inform them of the grave risks they face and to teach them biological truths about their physical and emotional vulnerabilities. We have to warn them in a no-nonsense manner about avoiding high-risk behaviors, and we need to encourage the highest standard. That is what we do in every other area of healthcare. But when it comes to sexuality, kids are being taught that they can play with fire. And the waiting rooms of doctors and therapists are filled with people who have been burned inside and out. I urge all of you in this room to condemn the dangerous messages foisted on our children. Make it known that the hazardous ideologies I've told you about and the odious material that you've seen will not be tolerated in your curricula or in books, pamphlets, and videos and websites created for your young people. It's not easy to speak of these things. It's awkward, and everyone squirms. But the stakes are very, very high, and it's just too important not to. Thank you very much.